Radical Self-Acceptance, Session 2, Becoming Intimate with Your Inner Life.
Welcoming the guests requires the same kind of commitment and mindfulness and care as we would bring to the most important other relationship in our life. Like becoming intimate with another person, it's a process of deepening. So it helps to consider, what is it that gives rise to real friendship? What sets the grounds for it? What ways of paying attention to another, of communicating with another, do we need to learn in relating to our inner life? Now, because we're often ensnared in a trance-like mind state, we're living out our strategies, we need an intentional ritual that wakes us up out of the dream. And every spiritual tradition that I've encountered has these kind of rituals to stop the world and wake us up. I've been in my own life considering these rituals as a sacred pause. In a sacred pause, we simply stop the judging or the busyness or whatever the self-improvement project is and attend. And my sense is that this sacred pause is really the beginning of any healing relationship, because we're clearing the space and the time to be with what is. So for a moment right now, just try pausing. Just drop everything and attend to experience. What most of us find is that it's not so easy to stop the busyness, the doing. In fact, we're quite addicted to being in a doing mode and pretty uncomfortable just hanging out, just being with. Listen to these words of Thomas Merton. There is a pervasive form of contemporary violence, and that is activism and overwork. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of its innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence. The frenzy of our activism neutralizes our work for peace. It destroys our own inner capacity for peace. It destroys the fruitfulness of our own work, because it kills the root of inner wisdom which makes work fruitful. Those are powerful words, calling our busyness violence. In Chinese, the syllable for busyness translates to mean heart-killing. Heart-killing. And we can sense it when we pay close attention, that when we're in a real busy mode, there is a tightness to our body. There's an armoring around the heart that makes it quite hard to feel tenderness. We stay busy to avoid feeling deficient. And yet it's only by pausing, it's only with some style of the sacred pause, that we can actually become intimate with what's happening. Now, this is exactly what the Buddha did, by sitting down under the Bodhi tree and committing to sacred presence. And it's really one of the great archetypal images in all of history. And as the story goes, the Buddha, as a young boy, had spent many years where he was living in his father's palaces and enjoying the riches and the fine music and the dancing girls and living quite protected but unaware of real life. And then, after he left his father's kingdom, he then swung to the opposite side and tried to get away from any pleasures, tried to subdue his desires. So on the night of his enlightenment, the Buddha stopped all these activities, all these attempts to become pure and simply sat still. So this is the marvel of it. He just sat down under the Tree of Awakening. And it was there that he faced the shadow energies that arose. They arose in the guise of Mara, god of greed, hatred, and delusion. There's a wonderful Tibetan tanka, which is a picture that depicts this mythic ritual and shows Mara attacking with a shower of poison arrows that represent the shadow deities. And the Buddha is seated in the classic posture of compassion, you know, one hand on his heart, the other extended to receive the forces of Mara. And as the arrows touch the Buddha, they become lotus petals and fall harmlessly to his feet. So anger, hatred, doubt, jealousy, shame, fear, the lure of sense pleasures, all transformed by this loving and wakeful presence. Not by doing, just by being. So this is the sacred pause, resting under the Bodhi tree. And we all need this ritual of pausing. We can't see what's true. We can't embrace the deities. If we're busy blaming and hiding and fixing and improving and getting other things done. This pausing, this discontinuing of habitual strategies breaks our routine and it makes real relating possible. It's the formal centerpiece, really, of all meditation and healing therapies. You might think of it in terms of good parenting, that for a child to really feel the healing presence of a parent, there really has to be a willingness for the parent to stop their activities, their doings. If they're lost in their ideas about what should be happening, their ideas about who the child should be, there's no quality of presence and connecting. Once there is presence, we begin to develop our relationship. It's the same with our inner life. Once we pause and really attend, we can begin to develop a friendship. We can begin to change the old pattern of neglect. So what happens? We pause, we pay attention, and the first unfolding in relating is some sense of recognition of what's here. Now this recognition comes because there's an interest to the attention. I find it's very, very powerful just to stop and pause and ask the question, what is true now? What's happening right now? This quality of interest or curiosity is actually quite powerful because when you think about it, it's impossible to be maintaining a sense of interest and curiosity and simultaneously rejecting something. The very nature of being interested is that there's an open quality to the attention. So in our practice, in our befriending of the inner life, we pause, we ask, what's happening? What's true now? And then there is a very powerful and skillful means of simply naming what we notice. This is found in so many cultures, naming the judgment, the anger, the fear, the shame. In ancient cultures, shamans learned that to name that which you fear or hate is a practical way to have some freedom around it. So we begin to name what we're aware of, and we name it with a tone of voice that communicates care. Connect with what is felt. Let's say we're in the midst of the grip of craving for food. We might note craving, craving, and then check with the body. Is this what it is? Is this what it is? Oh, fear, fear. Naming what is true most right now. In other words, we're developing this relationship with our inner life by noticing what's here, by checking and staying with our body to make sure that's true. Naming, feeling our body, and then acknowledging. Acknowledging by simply saying hello. In some way, we're greeting. Sometimes for me, it's helpful to take the Indian phrase or mantra, namo, I bow, and just sense that I'm literally bowing to this energy. We all have these deep pockets of shame or loneliness or fear, and they're very well defended. And if we name them, but don't in some deep way acknowledge them, there can easily be this message of rejection. These parts are asking for attention, but they're like a frightened child, or sometimes I imagine it like a timid wild creature, and they will not reveal themselves unless the surroundings are safe. So we begin to create this atmosphere, this space for relating, by simply being respectful, by naming and acknowledging, hello, namo. These first steps in cultivating a friendship are pretty commonsensical when we think of people in our lives, that we would make time for them, that we would look and see who's there, that we'd acknowledge them in some way. But it's not at all simple or easy when our pattern is to ignore or resist our inner life. So to decondition those patterns, we need to set these grounds of relating over and over, again and again, what's true now, naming, bowing to it. What makes it a sincere and fresh process is really what's been called beginner's mind, that we learn to be with our inner life with a genuine quality of interest, rather than the old, been there, done that, oh yeah, that's fear, I know that one, I've had that one all my life. Really trusting that this moment, what is expressing, can be a guide from beyond. And our only job is to really show up with some presence, with some care. And that presence means dropping assumptions, any assumptions about what's going to happen, because each moment is unique. So we really pay attention. Take a moment together and we'll just, in a quiet way, explore this initial setting of the grounds for relating in an intimate way. So make yourself comfortable and feel in an embodied way the truth of your experience, what your sitting posture is like right now. You might take a few moments to relax and let go through the body. Feel in your breath and let the senses be awake. And you can use this as a time to bring to mind something that's been difficult to accept about yourself, some place where you kind of hit a wall and feel unable to forgive. It might be a way that you've caused suffering to others or yourself and continue to. Just a place you judge frequently. And for now, let the situation or the circumstances that bring up this judgment be here so that you can see and hear and feel what it's like when you're really caught in feeling something's wrong with you. Sensing what's so bad about this. What's the worst thing about your behavior, your way of being? And stay in your body, feeling into the center of your body, sensing your experience, and just name what you're aware of, what feels most predominant. You might sense what's most true this moment. Maybe it's hard to connect in with anything, and what you're feeling is numbness, or tired, or confused. Or it might be fear. It might be sadness. With a gentle tone, just name what's there. Keep checking with your body to see if it matches. Ah, so is that what it is? Fear, fear. Name and then say hello when you feel you've named and connected with what's there. Sometimes what arises continues for a while and you can continue to acknowledge it. Sometimes it changes. Notice what it's like as you bow in some way to what you're experiencing. Be willing to start fresh. Ah, so what's true now? What's really true? And feeling into your body, naming and sensing what's there. Saying hello. Befriending is gradual. It takes great, great patience, a repeated willingness to pause and to be present. Now, sometimes when we're naming and encountering what's there, we'll open the gateways and what'll be revealed is the enormity of self-aversion. And it can feel overwhelming. I remember when I was in college and I was doing a lot of psychotherapy and working hard on myself, and I went on a weekend trip with a good friend, an older, wiser friend of 24. And she was kind of describing her process and how she worked with herself, and she said really what she's learning now is how to be her own best friend. Now, that phrase I've heard many, many times, but for some reason in that moment the floodgates opened, and I was just hysterical, breaking down, sobbing and sobbing, because it was so clear to me how I was the furthest thing from my own best friend. I mean, I was my worst critic. And in realizing that, there was a real uprising also of compassion and a wish to really learn how to be kinder. And what I've noticed over the years is that intention has been there, but there have been repeated cycles of contracting back into the trance, where I'm just acting out of this sense of something's wrong with me, I'm not okay. And then I'll hit a critical threshold of, oh, I'm miserable, and realize, oh, I've been down on myself again, and then re-resolve to be kinder, and around and around. Most of us really love the notion of befriending. In fact, probably what we most long for in life is being intimate. And as we know, it's what we most resist in so many ways also. So it's important to look closely at that, that this process of befriending and becoming intimate really has a gradualness to it, that there is a very habitual body of fear that has us pull back, whether we're trying to befriend our inner life or become intimate with another person. Maybe it's clear sometimes when we see it with other people. Sometimes there is a person who we're intimidated by, and we keep wanting to relax our fears and be more who we are, and yet in their presence we continuously find that we're shy or constrained. And it's like our body puts up a wall of fear that is very hard to relax. Similarly, in relating to our inner life, we like the idea of being intimate, of embracing and very kindly being with what's there, but we have this habit of fear that keeps us distanced, that has us shut down and not really be able to embrace what's there. For many years, I gave workshops just on forgiveness. I first gave a day-long, and in that day-long, it became clear that it could probably be a decade-long course. But we do these workshops, and I'd invite people to start reflecting on areas that were unforgiven. One man told a story that was quite moving. He described that as a younger person, he had taken care of a young girl's cat when she was off on vacation. And while he was taking care of the cat started acting very strangely. And he was very impatient with it and annoyed and would sometimes put it outside and just kind of ignore it because he just could not figure out what was going on with this cat. He belatedly realized it was sick, and unfortunately the cat had to be put to sleep before the little girl returned from her vacation. Well, this whole scenario he's relived countless times. And it's reflected to him his absolute defectiveness as a human. To him, it was completely unforgivable that he hadn't been kind to a dying creature. So I asked him, what would you have to experience if you began to forgive? Just if you began to move in that direction, what would you have to experience? And he paused. And he said, what I'd have to really experience is enormous grief and loss, that life is so short and all the times I haven't paid attention, and that I can't control life and that I'm powerless, and that something's fundamentally wrong with me. And it took some while that he just had to open to and be with that kind of anguish, which then turned to a grief and sadness that allowed him to feel soft, kind. And he said it was the first time in his life that he could then look back on that experience with that little girl and the cat, and rather than feeling that sharp edge of, I'm a horrible person, he just felt a real sadness, a real loss around life. But it wasn't the kind of sadness that he turned on himself. Forgiving and accepting is not a mental activity. It has to happen in the body and over time. The very process of accepting requires facing the fear and the pain that we've been avoiding. If it was easy, we would do it. It requires a real embodied awareness. And this is where our relationship with our inner life begins to shift from a mere acknowledging, a kind of cognition of understanding what the difficulty is about, to a genuine and healing intimacy. Joko Beck writes, we have to face the pain we have been running from. In fact, we need to learn to rest in it and let its searing power transform us. So this is the challenge of acceptance. That we are asked to relax the armor, the body of fear, and open to what we've been resisting, to the pain and the vulnerability of feeling deficient, not okay. The primary armor that we encounter, the primary tool for all our fight and flight strategies, are mental stories, because it's safer there. We try to control our world from a mental tower, and it seems to buffer us from the realness and rawness of embodied experience. And yet, by buffering ourselves, the very presence that's needed to heal is missing. Again, imagine, as a parent being with a child, if that parent is lost in ideas, in plans, in worries, the child can feel it. The real embodied presence is not there. So what this means is that a key in learning radical acceptance is discovering how to wake up out of the contraction of our mental movies. Now, we all live in stories and judgments and ideas about the future and the past, in an ongoing inner dialogue. And we try to think our way to happiness. We try to control experiences by telling ourselves what could go wrong and what to do. who's to blame, how it happened before. And it's so interesting, if we look closely, these stories or images and sound bites, they're a movie or a representation of life. Yet because we believe them, because we identify with them, they actually create a prison. They perpetuate our suffering. I heard one about a Jewish mother who sends her son a telegram, and on the telegram it says, "Start worrying, details to follow." It's that kind of thing. We're primed for what's going to go wrong. We try to use thoughts to anticipate things, to figure out things, even to navigate spiritual life. We can't think our way to freedom, our way out of suffering. So a central part of Buddhist and most meditation training is that we need to learn to recognize when awareness is caught in the stories, when we're in thought forms, and then learn to relax the grip, to open, to drop under the storyline and relate without distraction to this moment's experience. Now, this is meditation training and this is intimacy training. Every part of our life has to do with relationship, relating to inner energies and weather systems, relating to each other, relating to this earth. To become intimate means to wake up out of our movies and ideas and into the reality. Now, that doesn't mean that we stop thinking. Thinking's natural, valuable, necessary. But it means we have the capacity to open beyond the story and touch directly into the flow of what's real. Now, I find that a very powerful way to re-enter is to note thinking and then simply pause and ask, what's asking for attention? Much like the question, what's true now? This is an inquiry that can help us connect with what's happening in our body, in our heart. What's asking for attention right now? What's asking for acceptance? This isn't a cognitive kind of question. Rather, it's a question that invites us to pay deeper attention, to listen in a receptive way to our body's wisdom. Pause again for now. Just drop everything, ideas, asking yourself what this moment is asking for attention, asking for acceptance. Sometimes when we wake up out of our mental movies and inquire in this way, there's nothing strong, and we just simply relax back into the flow of our experience without having to choose a place to pay attention. But other times we'll notice when we wake up out of our mental movies that there's a very strong feeling of angst, kind of a grip in the chest, of insecurity, of vulnerability. And because this vulnerability is what we habitually avoid, this is the time to deepen our attention. We wake up out of thoughts and wake up into our bodies to relate to what's there. So what this means is we're in training to tolerate what we've habitually pushed away, to accept discomfort. Thich Nhat Hanh, when he teaches, often offers the image of the half smile of the Buddha. This very benign, gentle way of relating to whatever arises. So we'll explore this a little with an exercise that I think is very useful in how to relax habitual resistance, how to become hospitable to the guests. So as you listen to this right now, let yourself bring to mind a difficult situation, one that is current in your life, perhaps that's interpersonal, and that brings up a reaction of anger or fear or grief. It might be a rift with your partner, our loss of a loved one, our concern for somebody with a life-threatening illness, our hurtful behavior that you regret, a way you know that you've been ignoring or neglecting someone, a fear you might have when you're around someone. Just bring a scene to mind that might provoke this feeling. Seeing what's happening and hearing the words that might be exchanged. Notice what you're believing and feeling. Let the feelings be as full as they want to be, the feelings of grief or fear or anger, so that you can feel them in an embodied way. And mentally direct a stream of the word no at the feelings. Let the word carry the energy of no. No, no, no to the anger or the fear or the grief. No, rejecting, pushing away what you're experiencing. No, no, no to whatever's happening. As you do, feel what this is like in your body, your heart, and your mind. Imagine what your life would be like for the next months, years, if this situation and related feelings were continuously encountered with a big no. If you encountered your life with no, look into the future. And take a few deep breaths now. And let go by relaxing through the body or shifting your posture a bit. And then reflect again on this aversive situation. In other words, bring the images and the words, beliefs and feelings around it up. Feel what it's like. And this time, like the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, let there be a stream of the word yes that surrounds your experience. This is like the energy of the half smile. Yes, yes. Just agree to whatever arises, whatever's going on this moment. Yes, yes. Even if the experience is an anger, a feeling of no, hold that no in a gentle and larger space of yes. Sense what this is like in your body, in your heart, in your mind. What would your experience be in the months and years to come if you could bring the spirit of yes to difficult experiences? Kafka writes, "You can hold back from the suffering. You have free permission to do so, and it is in accordance with your nature. But perhaps this very holding back is the one suffering you could have avoided." Saying yes, agreeing, relaxing our resistance, opening to a more spacious awareness, can be understood as the difference between placing dye in a sink versus in a huge lake of water. With a real yes, we're allowing unpleasantness to float in a receptive and enlarged awareness, still felt honestly, fully, without resistance, but in a bigger space. The challenges of being a parent have probably offered me my greatest training in the art of the sacred pause and in saying yes. Over the last 2 years, my son and I have gotten snagged in a type of habitual reactivity that I've heard many mothers describe. We struggle daily over the rules about homework, phone time, computer play. And one day before I intervened, he had been on the computer for hours, and I knew that this had to end, I just intentionally practiced the pause. I simply waited, felt my posture, my energy, my heart. Anger was predominant, so I named that anger, anger, bowed to it. Yes, yes. And it was important to say yes because I would naturally be so critical of anger that I do the opposite of a yes. As I waited and sat with that, I felt more feelings kind of buried there. So I just posed the questions. What's asking for attention, for acceptance? What's under this anger? And felt into my body, and I discovered fear, a really deep fear that he would fail in his life and be unhappy. And I felt shame with that fear that my failings as a parent would cause his suffering. And when I stayed with it for some time, yes, yes, my heart started softening, and I was able to connect with the grief about feeling such a distance from my son. And it's a grief that lurks there when we lock into our dance, our fight, but it's often buried by the reactivity, so yes to the grief. Pausing and recognizing and relating to this layering of feelings with kindness gave me more resourcefulness in responding to my son's behaviors. I was able to see his wants and fears and hold them in the energy of yes, but not until I had done that with my own inner layers of reactivity. So it switched. I was no longer locked into he's the adversary and he's wrong. It was more of a big space of yes to both of our experiences, which of course allowed me to communicate in a more validating way. There was more room for mutual understanding. Since then, I try to pause before reflexively intervening. And my percentages are improving, but I have a ways to go. So this is to say that the reactivity and the fear and the shame doesn't just disappear after having been with. Rather, I feel like I'm cultivating this relationship with those energies, so I'm not living out of them. There's more presence with them. But there's still some distance to go. The beauty is that in any moment that we relax the resistance, that we stop playing out the strategy, there's a shift in our sense of who we are. And the shift is from blaming our experience, fighting with what's going on, to a much larger, more receptive awareness. It's a radical enlargement of identity. I sometimes think of this in terms of an ocean with waves, that we all have these conditioned waves of reactivity and thoughts. And we spend our lives often in a trance where we're living and thinking we are the waves, so we are a pattern of waves. And our awakening is to begin to realize that we're the ocean and that these waves arise and pass away in this ocean of being, but they don't define who we are. And in recognizing that larger identity, there's tremendous freedom to respond to the situation in a much wiser way. Sometimes I'm asked if what we're doing is witnessing, if we're pausing and stopping and paying attention and witnessing the anger or the shame or the fear. And it's important to know that we don't heal by observing experience from a safe distance. Sometimes observing is a necessary way to start out. But the real shift and awakening that frees us occurs as we embrace these shadow energies with embodied awareness. There are two descriptions from Buddhist nuns back about 500 years ago that continuously inform my practice. One of these nuns described her life and practice like this. She said, "I live life with my whole body. I move through life with my whole body." The second described her path in this way. She says, "Whatever I encounter, my response is, thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. Whatever arises, thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever." Imagine that. Imagine your whole body experiencing life. And with that quality of deep welcoming, grateful for whatever guests are there, no complaints whatsoever. When we can move through life in this way, with this kind of unconditional receptivity, there's room for living and for dying. And there's a deep courage that emerges, this kind of a confidence that whatever life brings, we can handle it. Some years ago, I was teaching at the Insight Meditation Society, and one of the students who came in to interview had Alzheimer's. He had been meditating for 20 years and clearly knew that it was happening. But sometimes we go totally blank. He had no access to words at all. And as he described it, he emanated a very kindly and interested attitude towards the process. There was sadness, but there was also humor. So I asked him, "What allows you to relate to what's going on this way?" His response, "I don't feel like anything is wrong. Painful, yes. Scary, yes. Not wrong." And then he told me about the early stages, before he had too many symptoms. He said he was occasionally actually teaching some classes and offering some talks on Buddhism, and he was invited to a large center. So he prepared himself for this talk, and he went and was standing in front of everyone, and he went blank. He absolutely went blank. He had no idea what he was supposed to say, what he was supposed to do. He was completely frightened and confused. So what did he do? He just stayed there, and he started to name what was happening. Afraid, afraid, embarrassed, confused, shaking, sense of dying, sinking, lost. Several minutes naming and just receiving and honestly feeling what was happening. And then he got calmer, and then there was more quiet space. Finally, he apologized. He said, "I'm sorry, that's it." And of course, as you might imagine, many of the students were in tears, and several came and told them that no one had ever offered teachings like this. They said that his presence was the deepest Dharma teaching. And so it is when we encounter someone that has the courage to be real, to let go into what is here, to not make it wrong, not anything, not death, nothing. And when we discover that greatness of heart that has room for the life that arises, it becomes very natural and very possible to relate to the waves of experience with genuine friendliness, with care. So this is the cultivation of a heartfelt relationship where we can befriend our inner experience again and again and again. Notice when we contract, pay attention, and soften, open, again, befriend. And when in our own inner relating, we can begin to, in that same way, not make anything wrong, there's a tremendous freedom that comes. So we'll close this talk with a meditation on befriending our experience. And again, to invite you to shift and adjust your sitting so that it's comfortable, so that you can close your eyes. Take a moment to sweep through the body and relax whatever places you're aware of particular holding or tension. Loosening through the shoulders. Softening in the belly. So you can feel the movement of a full breath. And another. As you settle into presence, wakeful, relaxed, let your intent be to befriend whatever arises, to awaken out of thoughts and live with an embodied awareness, allowing what moves through to move through. As a way of settling and quieting, it's quite fine to sense the inflow and the outflow of the breath. Sensing the sensations of the sitting posture, so that you know that you're here. When the mind drifts off in a thought form, simply note that, thinking, thinking. And after noticing thoughts, just relax open and pause for a moment. Sense what's true. What might be asking for attention. If there are any of the guests that appear, any of the energies that are difficult, just name what's there. Oh, fear, sadness, restlessness, grief. Naming and then immediately sensing even more deeply into your body. Is this it? Is this how it is? Really connecting with what's there. Connecting with the atmosphere of a yes. Bowing. Okay, just feeling what's here. Relating with a very accepting and friendly quality of attention. You can start fresh in any moment, waking up out of thoughts, becoming aware in the middle of your body, what's true now, receiving experience with a yes.